This is Kate Harness with 307net Radio, and today I'm joined again by a bunch of Buffalo High School students and Superintendent Charles Oskey. Hello, Charles, how are you?
Good morning. I had to look up at the clock. It's still morning, so I'm going to say good morning.
Good morning to you. And students, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. This is a very popular segment, and I'm happy that you have some good questions to ask Mr. Oskey this morning. So would you like to introduce yourselves?
Yes, so I am Gia Montestelli. I'm a junior at BHS.
I'm Ava Duarte, and I'm also a junior at BHS.
I'm Hazen Camino, and I'm a senior.
I'm Maddie Ludwig, and I'm also a senior.
I'm Claire Hicks, and I am a junior.
I'm Jeremiah Hawley, and I am also a senior.
I'm Sienna Lulias, and I'm a junior.
Thank you. And Sienna, you're going to kick off with the first question this morning for Mr. Oskey. So off you go.
So our first question, we were wondering, what kind of roles can students have in, like, the decision-making within the district?
Well, that's a great question. But I want to start out by saying I'm excited about this meeting this morning. A lot of people are going, what are you doing? I'm going up and meeting with the high school, what I call leadership, and we're asking questions. And so this is a great opportunity. So it does make my day. So what is your role? I think that kind of extends off one of the interview questions I had before is you as leadership in the building at BHS have a real direct impact with how the culture and what we do up here at BHS. But your role from there as student council is working with your building leadership. That can impact decisions at the district level from my level of piece, getting that feedback of what that looks like. Understanding the current topics in the whole district might be something that's a little overwhelming because it's the big district picture when we start talking about what impacts schools at every level because everything's a little bit different. But you do have a voice if that's what you're asking. And I think that voice really starts with you and your leadership here through the student council and through your building leadership. So that's kind of the role that it does play.
So before we talk any more about that, I have a question for the students, which is what appealed to you about becoming a member of student council? What was it that you felt was something that appealed to you about it?
Oh, I thought it was like, I think it was the big, like, making a difference for our student body, but being able to know from their perspective as well. So, like, being able to apply, being a student, and be able to work with that and be able to make changes from both sides and perspectives.
And do you feel you've been able to do that?
Yes. I feel like we've been easily able to listen to, like, our students and make different decisions benefiting them and both the teachers as well.
I think it's just really, like, a great way to get involved. It's, like, you get to be just a part of, like, the school atmosphere. Like, you're just a really involved student. If you're a part of student council, like, we run homecoming, we run blackout week, just all the very big things and events we put on for the school. And I just think it's a great way to get involved and be a part of, like, our school and our community.
So going back to the questions, one of the questions that you had was what formal channels currently exist, Mr. Oskey, for students to actually really have some influence in decision-making?
But this is a great example of that right now. Just the fact is we're sitting down having interview question gives me as a superintendent a pulse of where we're at BHS. I don't want to say it gives me the pulse of what's happening in the whole district, but this is part of that process of what those channels look like. But you as a student council, having that involvement, we did that last year with a couple other things. We asked to go back to the student council and what's their opinion, doing those surveys when things come to the table. That's the role, and I think it's a critical role because it's the voice of the students. But what we're doing here today gives me as a superintendent kind of a pulse with what your questions are. Because I think the stakeholders listening here today need to understand, I haven't even seen the questions yet.
No, we always keep them from you.
So when you come in and you talk about this, this is a great way of saying, hey, these are some things you as a student council or a student body that have questions about. So that gives me a pulse. So that's a connection that honestly isn't in every district. I mean, what we're doing here today is it's done in some, but I don't think it's done to this level where you actually come in and have a set of questions, and I as the superintendent are super excited to listen to what you have to question. This is a great example of that process.
Okay.
How much of an impact do those polls actually have on, like, the outcome of decisions?
Most polls, well, first of all, to understand who I am, polls are a data piece. So when you do a poll, I think there's a lot of misperception that just because I vote for one way, that's going to change it, but it's the overall majority. It's what's the feel behind it. So I'm going to tell you it does impact the decisions and overall, but that poll also includes everybody. And sometimes just one, it's multiple surveys. It's not one survey that we have to take a look at the district level.
Okay, so our next question is, like, how could students voice and, like, their opinions and be consistently part of, like, the decision-making process?
Consistently?
Consistently.
I think that's by you creating a student council that's very active and has a strong relationship with building leadership, so that when we do come to the monthly meetings or bi-monthly have conversations, what's the pulse or what's happening, that's a strong way to be consistent with what that looks like. If you look at leadership in any position or any business around the state, sometimes it changes with different people in different positions. So as a student council, if you have a really strong relationship and have a really strong program, a protocol of how you bring things through that, because we're big into the chain of command, I never want to make a decision based on your opinion without following the chain of command. Make sure you go through your school administration, up through the business office, and all those type of things as we do that. So I think it really starts with you're asking that consistency piece. Is that the strength of this organization is really key to how does leadership that's graduating, what have you established, what's the student council going to do? Even if you had a new student council leader, part of the protocol and what you're doing is setting up the tradition or expectations for the future coming up. And that could be super exciting that you're saying, hey, the kindergartner that becomes a senior, you know, in a certain number of years is going to be a part of a program that I helped establish. So it's kind of developing a program and a tradition, which BHS has a lot of tradition. So that consistency has to come, I think, starts here with you and your organization and what you're doing here today. If Mr. Oski's gone from the superintendent's position next year, I would hope you have enough tradition to say, we're going to continue to interview the superintendent, right? Mm-hmm. And have that push and have some of those things, all right? And that would be super exciting to just kind of see it happen.
Speaking of consistency, that takes us on to our next question. Ava, would you like to put this one to Mr. Oski?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of students here at BHS that thinks there's not a ton of consistency with how staff apply all of our policies and rules, just like with tardiness and the dress code. Are you concerned that different staff members have different approaches to things?
Again, not to say a concern, but it's a viewpoint that you have. And that's as you as a student council working with your leadership here, because to have my overall picture, my view from my point of view is the entire district. Okay, what does the policies and procedures look like for mine? And I can tell you that pile is pretty high right now because we are in the world of change. Mm-hmm. Charles, Mr. Oski, whatever you want to say, ho-ho from Monday and Tuesday, is basically we are doing some consistency, and that's things we're looking at. But to drive that piece and say it's a concern, absolutely. If it's a concern of yours, then bringing those as a student officer body to the table and having a conversation with leadership here and how that can be more consistent, I'm going to support that 100%. But to say it's you're going to bring that concern to the top to me is going to say I have some other priorities, but I am going to encourage you because it is a concern that you brought it to the table now that you guys work with leadership to have more consistency with that. And follow that chain of command, because I just talked a little bit about that chain of command thing. But yeah, bring those things to the table. Have you created a list of expectations and met with building leadership and talked about some consistency changes? That would be a solid way to get started with that.
So me and Ava last year we saw a problem with the dress code and consistency last year, and so we kind of made a committee and then went and talked to our like Mrs. Esponda and a bunch of different groups of leaders, I mean leaders in the high school and teachers, and we kind of like showed them our concern and addressed the issue that it just isn't consistent. And we've noticed that there hasn't been a lot of change in that this year with consistency. So like after we have talked to the leaders of our school, like where do we go to next to help address that?
So we're talking Dean of Students. So have you talked with Mr. Cox? Have we started that process over? There was a change in kind of some direction. So that would be something that we started with Dean of Students, then maybe Dean of Students, and then we work with Mr. Ostermeyer, and then we kind of move up that chain of command. But again, the position you're talking about has changed.
Okay.
So that might be something that you look at in doing that piece.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. At BHS, this year the daily schedule has changed to an 8-period day. This means students have classes in each subject every day, and the classes are shorter, more frequent than previously. The classes are typically about 40 minutes, and many students feel that there's not enough time to cover classwork, especially for hands-on classes like labs, ceramics and woodworking, and the shop classes. So what are your thoughts on that?
So part of that initiative was that there's two ends of the spectrum. So we've seen a lot of things where kids were missing because of the block schedule. So I'll tell you what my input was. Every kid had to meet with their core teacher every day. Because there was evidence out there that we had kids that were missing core classes or only having a core class once a week. So as we looked through that, that was a transition that happened that was voted on by the staff to move. In addition to that, this year we're looking at a different, so there's a committee that's been put together to look at what other schools are doing to meet that. So whether it's a hybrid block, but the reality is the evidence shows that core kids need to meet with their core teachers every day. Because you have a kid that's meeting one time in the week and then doesn't see a teacher for almost 7 or 8 days. Okay, there's some struggles that go along with it. There's pros and cons to that. But the reality is what's best for all kids. And it is an adjustment period. It is an 8-period day. But I will own that because that was part of the direction when we came into my new position is how do we eliminate some of these gaps that we have and part of those concerns with kids meeting with their core teacher every day and getting behind. So we'll wait to see what that data looks like. But the reality, that journey isn't over. I mean, I'll summarize that right now because the committee leadership here in the building has, I think they had their first meeting last week to look at some other very successful schools and what their schedules look like. And some of that is looking at whether it's a hybrid or things like that. And that's balancing academics and missed school time. Because if we come to the top of this, my responsibility as a superintendent is about providing a quality academic experience. So kids being in front of teachers as much as they can be is one of the priorities. Okay.
So students, how do you feel about the 8-period day? Some of you, this is the first time you're going to have it ever, and it's going to go away because you're seniors, and others are juniors. And juniors the junior year is quite a heavy workload.
Oh, yeah.
How is it? How are you finding it?
I think I.
You're a senior, aren't you?
I'm a junior.
Oh, you're a junior. I'm sorry.
I personally, I'm not big on the 8-period days, just because I feel like there's a lot of work, but not a lot of time to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with students at BHS, we're all very, we do a lot, all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all very
involved.
Yep. And so, and I think it's really hard to be able not to really have that time given during
mm-hmm.
the school day.
Yeah.
I feel like the 8-period day, you spend the time that you're given trying to cram in the learning and the workload and stuff like that, but not given enough time to really get it done.
Yeah. Well, and also when we had the modified block where 2 days a week we only had 4 classes a day, it really brought the workload down and gave us kind of time to breathe a little bit. But with a constant 8-period day, it feels like it's just you're going constantly. And there's no, reprieve. Because typically with the 4 classes each day, what would end up happening would be that you would have kind of an easier day and then a more difficult day. And it was nice to have that break, for sure.
One of my thoughts is I've been fine with an 8-period day. I wasn't a big fan of block days because it just kind of, some classes just dragged on. And like you said, it's hard to go from not seeing my teacher for 2 days and then coming back into jumping right back into things. But one of the things I do miss was advisory.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have right now is a 20-minute reading period. What are your thoughts on the difference between why we have a 20-minute reading period or that we could have it be free homework and the kids who want to read can read and other people can get work done?
But again, that needs to start with you as a student body coming to your leadership and your teachers, because that started with your team here at BHS. So without stepping over their side of you, it went as a survey to your teachers. And then that survey came back, and then it was approved at my level. But the reality is, if you're talking about where that consistency comes in, is asked to be a part of, hey, can we sit down and talk about evaluating? And I know building leadership right now is evaluating. Is this a period day working? Is it not working? What does that look like? And maybe this would be good support for that committee that was put together that you guys could be give some input to individuals there so that could be brought to the table.
Do you know why they moved to a reading period, not like ACT prep or anything else, really?
I don't know the answer to that question yet.
So as a parent, just to insert another partner in this, as a parent, I wonder to myself, you know, how can you possibly have an effective ceramics class when you've got kids drifting in, they've got 25, 30 minutes to do something, and then they've got to pack it all up again and leave the classroom. How could you possibly do a science lab in a 40-minute period? How does the actual delivery of a quality education happen within that short time frame?
There's two sides of it, so I want to come back and tell a story. So I was that vocational teacher that lived in a block schedule, lived in an eight-period schedule, okay? You taught with 30 kids in a classroom with eight welders, and how do you routine through that? So some of that comes back to the creativity within the classroom and what you're doing and how you get there. Because I'm a clean freak, so we had to clean up. So we picked up, and whatever you do it. So, but I also lived through a hybrid schedule where vocational classes had a block schedule, but the core classes met every day for an hour. Mm-hmm. So that was a piece that got brought into that schedule. There was classes that were specifically for kids that were struggling, so it was that time for that extra piece where there were kids that didn't need that time that could do advanced studies. This is stuff that has to grow over time through feedback through you guys, because even looking at the block schedule, there are negative things on that end of the aspect too. There are negative impacts on here, but bringing this all together and what can you tweak, again, is part of what leadership is here to say, is this works, doesn't work. Most of you that have been in seniors and juniors, you are only familiar with a block schedule, correct? Mm-hmm. So this part of living an eight-period schedule or a seven-period schedule, which some other schools are, other kids would be saying the same thing. It's kind of a routine. We don't know any different, right? We don't know this process. So when you shift to that piece, that this is that kind of in-between, we're shifting. But what you guys are asking are really good questions. But in both worlds, I got to be honest in saying there's pros and cons in either one.
Right.
There really is. And from a district leadership piece, teachers in front of kids every day, there's a lot of evidence that shows there's a lot of success with that. Now, what that day looks like, okay, it's still the same number of minutes in a day. Sometimes now we're putting eight classes within that same, whether some districts are doing seven, but they offer a 0 hour, or they offer a creativity, whether you call it a study hall or different creativity pieces with that. But the reality, the time is still the same. How are we using our time effectively, and how do we get that instruction across? So pros and cons of that is there are schedules out there that have been met and developed over time because of changes in feedback like what you guys are bringing to the table. And I'm hoping that's what the committee, which is an expectation of mine, that committee looks at what other people have learned over time, because we're not the only school that teaches ceramics. Okay, mm-hmm. We're not the only school that has a vocational class. And some of these schools that are high-performing schools are on seven-period schedules, so how are they meeting the needs of the kids? Some are on the block schedule, so what's the difference? What's that creativity? There are districts out there that start school late and end late. Okay, there's just a variety. So I think if we meet something that meets the needs of the community in this high school through the feedback of leadership here, I think we can come up with a solution.
So you've described a review process. What are the measures that determine, you know, what is successful and what
So it started 2 years ago when I got here. So I had a third-party person go out and look at high-performing schools and what their schedules were, and we looked at longevity, schools that are well-performing, and they're also doing very well with their, what I call the culture of their schools, which is athletics and the community and that kind of stuff. They're maintaining a long. So what do their schedules look like? Because they just didn't pop it up overnight. Some of these schools, it's been consistent. It took 7 to 8 years to develop where they're at, and they're always tweaking it, so it's never a type of thing. So we took those high-performing schools, and we brought those in. There's like 7 or 8, and then we narrowed it down to similarities to districts like us, our size, that also have a KC. I mean, it's a lot different demographics when you have one school our size that only has one high school in the entire community. It's different, but those demographics. So we've narrowed it down to some of those, and we looked at data and high-performing academically, but are also very successful kind of culture-wise, and then those are the thing; those are the ones that committee will go look at.
Going back to that piece on consistency, both this year and last year, the plan with Fridays has been to have an 8-period day, right? But from our perspective, right, without any need, the Friday schedule has changed, and it's felt as though lunches were cut almost in half.
Mm-hmm.
Where was that change coming from? As they were both supposed to be 8-period days, it started at 8, ended up at 1:25.
Mm-hmm.
What was the cause for that change?
So the change in the lunch program probably happened with the change in the schedule. So again, that's usually the student council sitting down and saying, hey, we'd like to sit down and have the same conversation. I don't want to answer a question I don't have an answer to, because the reality, if I follow the chain of command, schools bring their schedules to us with the understanding there's a process, so that's kind of where it needs to start, okay?
I just kind of jumping off the the Friday schedule. If we want to meet with kids every day, which is what the adults in this building have indicated, then why are they looking at a 4-day week? Because wouldn't that be less time meeting with students?
Can I also add to that? Do you feel also, like, on top of that, like, getting rid of the Friday is another, like, precedent as to putting activities over academics?
Those are great questions on the table. And I'm going to answer that question straight up. This community, when I walked into, the surveys went out, and the surveys came back that this community wanted a 4-day week. Okay? So this was before Mr. Oski even stepped into this position.
Mm-hmm.
So when we came into this position, there was things like a trimester and some other things that were tried. And that failed. I'm going to be honest with you, that failed. But it lingered on is the survey said that the community, the stakeholders, and I want to repeat that, stakeholders and community wanted us to look at a 4-day week. Okay. So when I got into my first year and I found out there hadn't been a school calendar developed, which was non-typical, because usually you develop a 2-year calendar. So in my first year, it's like, oh my gosh, we got to struggle and put a calendar together. So we put a calendar together. The next year, I put another committee together, and we surveyed people, and we put a 2-year calendar together based on a 4.5-day week.
Mm-hmm.
But out of that survey, there were about 60% of people that completed the survey that said, how come we didn't go to a 4-day week? All right, so in that survey, coming back to me with the direction is there was no closure to the 4-day week. So we came back as a committee, and I developed a committee separate of the calendar committee to say, is the 4-day week really something that fits and meets Johnson County School District number 1? And what does that look like? We have people, Casey has a 4-day week, the alternative school has a 4-day week, but the reality of the question is it good academically? Okay, what is it good for kids? So in that process, it is about guarding educational time. I'm not going to lie to you. All right? But whether it's a 4.5-day week, 4-day week, or a 5-day week, those are some things that are coming out of the surveys, is that sacred time, the amount of time kids are out of school, the amount of time kids are not in front of school. But for you to also know, it's not days, it's hours. So a 4-day week means that you have to have the same contact hours in a 4-day week that you do in the 4.5-day week. So you actually have, I'm just going to use round numbers for everybody to understand, 1,100 contact hours with high school kids.
Mm-hmm.
So you either spread that out over 5 days or you spread that out over 4 days. What does that look like? Well, it means a longer day, or it means more days during the year. So it's really not number of days, it's contact hours, which is traditionally where that is. The state changed that. You guys are getting a math lesson, aren't you? Okay, so statutes changed, which changed it from, it's like a 1,000 and so on, because they took out passing periods. Because passing periods used to be considered contact time. Well, in my world, that's really not contact time, other than I'm saying, hey, how's it going? Are you going to your next class? Okay, that's really not instructional time. So now it's based on hours of actually teaching time with teachers. So the 4-day week is wrapping up. It's a committee, and that's a great question because it's out in the community. Why is Mr. Oski pushing this? Mr. Oski's not pushing this. Mr. Oski's trying to finish something that started before I got here, but to finish it in such a way stakeholders felt like they had their input and were doing what's best for kids. All right?
So what can I ask what your personal opinion is on the matter?
I've lived in both, so that's a great question. I see benefits in a four-day week with the stress levels that teachers go through, because that Friday can be prep days and can really do some professional development and get caught up. I see some downfalls to it too. All right, the downfalls, they're longer days. Right, there's some long days, especially if you're involved in activities. There's some false statements out there. A four-day week saves money. It doesn't save any money. All right, it doesn't save any money at all. As a matter of fact, your buildings are just as busy. It's just about as a matter of how you organize your time. But I've seen success in a four-day week. However, I'm not saying that in such a way that that's the best fit for here, because I've done my research. And I know four-day weeks are not good in some communities. Where a four-day week has been successful, it's because it fits the needs of the community and the schools. Okay, there are four-day weeks that have not been successful because it doesn't fit the needs of the community. So based on my answer, in the community that I was in, it was very successful. When I was in Wright, when I was the administrator there, I'm the one that led the first initial movement for Wright to go to a four-day week, because I felt it was beneficial. We had kids missing almost 200 hours of school time for activities. So that focus on it. It failed. We needed 70% of the community to do it. We got a vote of 65%, so we stayed with a five-day week. Wright is now just went to a four-day week. So, I mean, it's where the community is and what it is. But it's not about three-day weekends. I got to be honest with you. A four-day week is not about a three-day weekend. Mm-hmm. It's about giving some time. It's really about adjusting what you're doing. We have to look at our classified staff so that people aren't losing hours. There's a lot of details to that. It's not just does it impact you as students. What does it do for bus drivers, custodians, mm-hmm. secretaries? All that stuff has to be gathered up and brought mm-hmm. into that process. But the number one thing, is there an advantage to you as students educationally? That's the question that's on the plate. And then the second one is, what do we do for daycare for young kids? Mm-hmm. I mean, the community has to be able to meet those needs. So it's kind of some of those type of things that are on the plate. I'm in favor of it, to answer your question, if it's best for the community.
Good answer.
My reality of this is, I need everybody here at the table to say, if we do go to a four-day week, it's not happening. It's going to take 2 years to put that in place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The biggest mistake that happens is when people vote to go to a four-day week, they try to implement it in 1 year, and it's not successful. You got activity schedules that are scheduled out 2 years in a row. You got calendars. You have lots of things. So my place right now is, I think the four-and-a-half-day week could be met if we tweak some things too. I think a four-day week could do it. There's absolutely zero, and make that very clear on to here, very clear, zero interest in going back to a five-day week. Okay? Very clear that there's no interest in going back to a five-day week.
So when will the four-day week committee, and it is a rigorous process.
We're behind schedule, so we've just requested from the Board of Trustees that we get some more time, and I own that as a superintendent, because I just have not had the time to get two of the larger school districts similar to our size to do an interview with them. How is their 4 day weeks going? And look at that. So Torrington would be one. There's a couple school districts to see if it's really, was there an impact, a positive impact, and why they went to it and what that advantage is. So we as a 4 day committee have asked to get an extension and make a presentation to the boards sometime in April, March or April.
Will that be when you make your recommendation, or is that looking at further steps?
My answer is going to be further steps.
Okay.
The boards at that point in time is going to have to say, okay, we're interested according to the stakeholders, because remember, board members are elected by your stakeholders, that they would say one thing or another. There's not enough evidence to move forward, so we need to be done. There's enough evidence or support that we should really look into it
mm-hmm.
and pursue a four-day week. But again, it's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
It's a couple. So for you in your position, you probably wouldn't be a part of a four-day week. Fair?
Well,
did you understand the complexity of that now?
Yes. That was very...
Did I answer your question of why we're doing a four-day week?
Yes.
And those are questions that we get asked all the time, so thanks for asking it, because I hope people listen to why we're doing it.
Nice. Well, students, thank you for a very lively conversation. I hope you've got answers. Ms. Roski, thank you for always being so gracious and willing to sit in the hot seat and listen to questions and answer them so fully and frankly. Thank you. And
well,
everybody,
I hope it was good.
Yes.
I mean, I got to ask a question. Was it informational or not?
Yes.
Yes.
For sure.
Did I meet your needs?
Very.
Yeah.
Now, like you said, that's the political way to answer the question, but I answered the question on what I believe.
That's a good
we can make whatever schedule we want work. We just have to make sure we do it together, right?
I think now knowing from your point of view, it's changed my point of view because I wasn't looking at it from different teachers and custodians and all of those points of view. So
everybody that's impacted has to have an opportunity to look at how that impacts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, everybody.
And on that note, Belle, thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah.